I walked up the iron steps to Alessandro's lair. Shadow bounded ahead of me, no doubt expecting a treat. 3 days had passed since we raided the lab. I slept for two of them. I had dim memories of being moved and Alessandro sitting next to me, but I couldn't tell if it had been real or wishful thinking. Today was the first day I was up and moving around. While I slept, the rest of the wall near my former room had collapsed. The warehouse resembled a crushed shoebox, with one side still up and the opposite wall in shambles. We had to move into the nearest building while we figured out what to do. At least we managed to save the servers. Runa did rescue her sister. I met Hallie this morning. She was just like her sister and her brother. Ragnar wouldn't stop touching her to reassure himself that she was really alive. And she finally told him to knock it off or else. Linus left a cryptic email for me, consisting of exactly two sentences.
One down, four to go. To be continued.
I assumed it meant the National Assembly wouldn't be coming for our heads. Nevada would be on her way home in 4 days. Ahead, Shadow barked. I climbed the last of the steps and walked into the old fire station rec room. Alessandro turned, and my world stopped.
Hey.
An intelligent human being, that's me.
Hey.
So far, this conversation was going splendidly. It dawned on me that the folding tables in the middle of the room were gone, and so were all his weapons. Two suitcases and a duffel bag waited in the corner.
You're leaving.
I have to go.
He said something else, but I couldn't hear it over the sound of my heart breaking. Embarrassment flooded me in a hot rush. I loved him, so I thought he loved me and wanted to be with me, and he had never considered it. The job was over, and he was leaving. He was leaving. I had this whole speech planned. I was going to tell him that I loved him, but I could never join him in Italy. I planned to explain that a fling with him wouldn't be enough for me, that I knew it was presumptuous because we hadn't even gone on a date. But I'd made a deal with my grandmother, and I had responsibilities to my house. I wanted to tell him that I would help him break free of whatever forced him to do what he was doing now, no matter how he felt about me. I wanted to get it all out in the open, so if he wanted to try to be with me, he would know everything before we even started. I had built a fantasy in my head again, and the sight of his packed suitcases shattered it. He wasn't even thinking about introducing me to his family or taking me with him. If he had, I couldn't, but I still thought, I wanted. I was a fool.
Catalina?
I forced myself to look up and meet his eyes. Are you going back to Italy to your family? My voice didn't shake. It was a small miracle.
No.
Too bad. I'm sure you must miss them. The words came out on autopilot. I was babbling, but it was better than crying. If they are ever in the States, I would be happy to meet them. He crossed the floor and put his hands on my shoulders.
I'll never take you to meet my family. They wouldn't understand. They don't deserve it.
Of course. Who was I to meet House Sagredo?
I have to go.
He looked like he was about to kiss me. I waited for another breath, but he didn't move. Let me help you, Alessandro. The words escaped before I caught them. Alessandro let go of my shoulders and stepped back.
You can't.
Are you coming back? Tell me you'll move mountains to get back here to me, and I'll wait for you. No matter how long it takes.
I won't lie to you.
And just like that, it was over. I turned around and walked down the stairs. He did not come after me. Outside our makeshift house, Arabella stepped out of the doorway and saw my face.
What happened?
He's leaving.
What? He can't leave. You fed him the pepper. You joked. You were happy.
She spun to the fire station.
I'll make him stay. I'll bring him back here.
No, I don't want anyone to force him. It's for the best.
Catalina!
It's for the best. She hugged me.
and we walked into the house together.
He sat on the roof and watched her through the window. She was trying to cook with a hot plate and utensils she'd salvaged from her ruined kitchen. That was just like her. Instead of buying a new pan and knife set, she had dug in the rubble and fished them out. They meant something to her. She never left things she cared about behind. Or people, no matter what it cost her. The look on her face when he said he was leaving nearly broke him. He thought of walking away from it right then and there. He'd almost kissed her, but if he had, he couldn't have torn himself away. But he didn't leave things unfinished, and he'd sunk too much of his life into this hunt to abandon it now. A soft chime sounded in his headset.
Dimi.
I looked through the files you got from Diatheke. You're right. He was last seen in Montreal.
The Montreal it is.
Did you get to see her?
I did.
In the window, she was chopping vegetables. He wondered if it was one of those hell peppers.
And? Was she everything you expected?
She was nothing like I expected. You'd love her.
You could stay with her. I know you want to.
It's not about what I want.
You've done enough. Eventually, it has to be about what you want. Otherwise, what's the point?
Right now, he didn't need the extra doubt.
Did the wire clear?
Of course it did. I can't do this for too much longer. I can't sleep at night. I have nightmares. I wake up thinking you died. You are my only brother. Walk away, Alessandro. Please.
I will. After I kill him.
He pushed the button on his headset and ended the call before she said anything else. The ticket was already booked. He looked one last time at his angel and jumped off the roof.
A misunderstanding. The Yarrow case. Some days just suck. First, I found a stain on the cute dress I planned to wear today. Then I spilled my coffee. Then I hit my toe on the doorframe to the office. I really wanted to kick the door. But the last time I hit the back of my head and then punched the offending surface, I had to lie to Catalina and claim that a support beam in the abandoned building spontaneously collapsed. If it was my older sister instead of my second oldest sister, I wouldn't get away with it. Nevada knew when you lied to her. Catalina totally believed me. Lying to Catalina wasn't a habit I cultivated. Oh, I lied casually all the time and never got caught. But lying to Catalina was like kicking a baby deer. It made me feel guilty, and I avoided feeling guilty whenever possible. But my family just now relaxed enough to stop continuously worrying I would change my shape and be killed because of it. I didn't want to heap more onto the worry pile. I was supposed to be working on the case Catalina took for her friend, and I was making good progress when Leon called. Leon was my younger cousin. Mom had adopted him and my older cousin, Bern, on account of my aunt being a heinous bitch. And they were more like my brothers. One time, I called Bern brother-cousin in public, and then we had to leave the wedding reception for Mom's friend because everyone kept giving us weird looks. It was hilarious. Leon kept the call short.
I fucked up. Come help me and Grandma. Don't tell Catalina.
I wasn't planning on telling Catalina. She had her hands full. A quick investigation revealed that Grandma Frida was gone and so was the brick, the armored vehicle that was her new baby. She took one of the Humvees we claimed when some idiots attacked our warehouse and spent the last 3 years turning it into an indestructible monstrosity. She never let any of us drive it, which meant that Leon must have called her first, and she took the brick and went to help him. Leon had been working on the Yarrow case, named so because of the subdivision where the woman he was investigating lived. I didn't know much about it, except that the woman worked as an accountant and apparently embezzled money from her friends' businesses. None of that required either Grandma Frida or the brick. I jumped into my car and drove to the address he texted. Yarrow Northwest was a master-planned community in Katy, which was technically its own city west of Houston. In reality, Houston sprawled in all directions, like some giant amoeba that gobbled up the neighboring municipalities. It swallowed Katie a while ago, and now there was no way to tell where Houston ended and Katie began. The Yarrow boasted about 70 home sites, all featuring eco-smart technology, large yards, amenities like tennis courts and an on-site water park with slides and a lazy river, and prices of $1.5 million and up. According to Leon, they actually measured the grass on each lawn with a ruler. It was so trendy, it made me want to spray paint unicorns pooping rainbows in their driveways just to add some life to the place. Buying a house in Yarrow made a statement. I am successful. Look at my house. Look at my beautiful family. Look at our lazy river and our precision-trimmed lawn and our perfect little flowers and despair, for we are better than you. Who would want to float in their lazy river anyway? Logically, I could think of some reasons why someone would want to live in a place like that. But it wasn't for me. We worked too hard for our money. When we bought a house, nobody would tell us how long our grass could be, what color we could paint the walls, or where we could park our cars. If I wanted a turret on my roof, I would get a damn turret. When we bought a house, all of us had been working very hard toward that magical house, but so far we hadn't found a good one. A house would solve a lot of our security problems. The warehouse wasn't defensible, and we were all too old to live together. Byrne had been dying for a place of his own. Leon, too. Trouble was, we needed something large enough for all of us and secure. And while there was plenty of mansions and compounds around Houston, there wasn't much available in our price range. Catalina had gone a little crazy trying to get this taken care of, and I watched her closely. We didn't need the repeat of the other incident. I took the exit, drove up the road to the side street, and took a short, picturesque drive to the gated entrance of Yarrow. I smiled at the guard in the booth and punched a code into the digital display. The heavy iron gates parted, and I steered the Mercedes through. The guard smiled back as I drove in. The car was fancy enough, and I looked the part. A pretty 19-year-old blonde in a designer gray dress driving a Mercedes.
Call Leon.
The phone rang, and my cousin answered through the car's speaker.
Are you almost here?
I'm in the neighborhood. Which house is it?
Keep going. You'll see it.
He hung up. And that wasn't ominous. At all. I guided the car down the lane. To the left of me, a beautifully landscaped median offered flower beds and picturesque shrubs. To the right, driveways peeled off, each leading to a walled estate, secured by an identical gate. You'll see it. All the houses looked the same. Some had stucco, some were brick, but at the core, they were all the same, slightly modified versions of a McMansion. The house on my right was missing the gate. That fact took a second for it to register, and I drove right past it. I reversed and backed up. The gate lay in the inner yard, twisted. Past it, a large vehicle-shaped hole gaped where the front door should have been. Damn it, Leon! I turned into the driveway, leaned forward as I drove up to the hole, and peered through the windshield. The interior of the house was darker than the outside, but I saw the unmistakable blocky outline of brick's rear. The Humvee was in the house. The damages. So many damages. Catalina would kill him, and I would hold him while she bashed his head in. Inside, I made my way through a wide foyer. Twin staircases hugged the opposite walls, leading upstairs to a unified landing. Two black tire marks stretched from the front door across the shiny gray marble floor, across a beige oriental rug, all the way where brick now waited in front of a steel door. The door looked really out of place in an upscale house and sported a big dent. A panic room. Great. They had driven the Humvee through the front door, through the foyer, through the sitting room, and half of the damn house, and then they rammed it into the steel door. Damn it. Damn it with sprinkles on top. Grandma Frida sat on top of brick, looking bored. To the right, shirtless Leon rested on the floor, leaning against a coffee table that had somehow survived the vehicular assault. His t-shirt, once white and now bloodstained, was wrapped around his head. A white man in his mid-30s frantically paced back and forth around a white couch, as if trying to wear a hole in the rug.
Have you all lost your minds?
It seems like a fair question. Leon pointed to the man.
His fault!
I looked at the man.
Who are you?
The man stopped pacing and looked at me for the first time.
I'm Kent. Kent Mills? I live here. This is my house.
He was the suspect's spouse.
What happened?
Leon gave me an exhausted look.
This is Kent Mills. He works as a registered nurse. This is his house, except it's actually being foreclosed on because his wife, Sandra Mills, who is our suspect, failed to pay the mortgage for 6 months.
I did pay the mortgage!
The voice came through the speaker above the steel door.
It's a misunderstanding!
Kent spun toward the door.
Oh yes, another one of your famous misunderstandings. It's a clerical error, it's a computer glitch, and you'll call them tomorrow to straighten this right out.
You're a bastard, Kent! The stupid, selfish bastard!
Kent sucked in a lung full of air. I used my best impersonation of Mom's voice.
Shut it!
He clicked his mouth closed. I turned to Leon.
How did Brick get in the house?
I'm getting to that. We were hired by the Shaw Distillery to investigate possible embezzlement. I determined that their bookkeeper, Sandra, was robbing them blind.
That's a lie, and I'll sue you for libel!
That suit will be thrown out. Because it should be slander, not libel. If you're going to threaten someone, at least do it correctly.
I looked into the other businesses she did the books for. She befriended people, convinced them to let her handle their books at a friend discount, and then stole everything they had.
That's another lie! I'm telling you, it's a misunderstanding!
Leon rolled his eyes.
A lie the way your MBA is a lie?
Kent blinked.
Wait, what? I saw the diploma from UT. It's in the office.
Fake. She has an accounting certificate from Houston Community College. UT has no record of her ever attending.
It's
a misunderstanding.
Get to the part where you two drove the car into the house.
Grandma Frida drew herself straight.
It's not a car. It's an armored assault vehicle.
She petted Brick's roof.
You don't listen to her. You are a magnificent beast.
I had to strain not to shake my fists at them.
I found 9 businesses she defrauded for a total of $8 million.
$8 million? Really?
She's been doing it for years.
$8 million, Sandy, and you couldn't pay the mortgage?
It was fine! It was all fine until you ruined it!
Where did the money go?
She bought a winery. Seriously, who does that?
Sandy, what the hell do you know about wine?
Oh, you never believed in me, Kent!
My head began to throb. I rubbed my temples.
I came here to talk, to give her a chance to come clean. At that point, Mr. Mills ran out, hysterically screaming that his wife had locked herself in the panic room with his little girl.
A child? These two had a child?
So you called Grandma, talked her into driving Brick here, and rammed it through the house into the panic room? Do you have any idea the conversation Catalina will have to have with our insurance company?
Leon waved his arms.
I did my due diligence. First, I had him formally hire us. He signed a waiver absolving us from any liability resulting from damages to the property. Second, I called Grandma. I wanted to go with a blowtorch. She decided that, and I quote, ramming it is faster.
Grandma!
Well, the angle of approach wasn't good. The brick is wider than the door, so it's hard to hit it right.
You drove the brick into the house, and you didn't even break the door.
How was I supposed to know she'd spent the money on ballistic-resistant plate steel?
I deserve to have nice things. I work hard, and safety is important to me.
I was not consulted about said ramming. I had to dive out of the way and hit my head on this stupid coffee table.
I wished I could growl, but it would just freak everyone out.
Where is the child now?
Ugh, it's not a child.
Leon passed me a framed photograph. In it, Kent and Sandra held a white Persian cat.
That's the name of the cat. little girl.
I turned to Kent.
Why did your wife hide in the panic room?
Clint called and screamed at me that Sandra is a scammer and she bankrupted his bakery. Patrick from the winery had called him and Clint checked his accounts. I logged into our bank to see if there were any weird deposits, and I found that we're broke. It's worse than broke. We're in debt. Our personal credit lines are maxed out, our mortgage hasn't been paid since August, and when I confronted her, she kidnapped my baby and ran into the panic room, and now she's threatening to hurt her!
Everything was fine until you decided to go digging! Oh, I gave you everything, and you just couldn't leave it alone! Why can't you believe me, Kent?
You stole from our friends! Everyone knows! Clinton Patrick called everybody! Everyone hates us!
I made their businesses. Every single one of them was failing until I helped them. They owe me.
Kent looked at me.
I just want my cat back.
Okay. I walked up to the door. Mrs. Mills, this is silly. You can't stay in the panic room forever.
Yes, I can.
What would you like to happen? What would it take to get you to come out?
I want you all to go away. And I want everyone to apologize to me for lying about me. I want Patrick to come here and tell me how sorry he is that he made everyone mad at me.
Denial was a terrible thing. I tried for my business voice. Mrs. Mills, that's not realistic. You embezzled a significant amount of money. That's an irrefutable fact, provable by financial records and bank statements. No amount of apologies will make it go away.
What do you people want from me? I do everything. Do you want my blood? Is that it? Do you want blood sacrifice?
Nobody wants that. We want you to be healthy and uninjured. Why don't you come out and we can talk about it? I'm sure you were under a great deal of stress. We all make mistakes. As you said, maybe it is all a misunderstanding. Kent rolled his eyes. Leon made money counting gestures.
You know what I think? I think you're a conniving little bitch! You can tell that bastard that I will break every bone in his piece of shit cat's body. He loves her more than me anyway.
Who wouldn't? I looked at the door. It seemed standard, solid, with a wheel that rotated, and probably multiple steel bars that secured it when the wheel was turned. Once she locked it from the inside, the wheel wouldn't move. Leon, call Sergeant Munoz and let him know that we're about to have an incident. I need all of you to leave the building and not peek. I want to have a private conversation with Sandra. They looked at me. Do you want her out of that room or not? I made shooing motions with my hands. Go on.
I want to—
Please leave. Your baby is counting on you. I watched the three of them walk out of the building. The thing about metamorphosis mages was that everyone thought we were one-trick ponies. We turned into monsters and sometimes went nuts. But there was more to it. So much more. I pulled on my magic. It tried to bury me like an avalanche, a glowing mess of rainbow colors churning together. I picked just one, the dark red one, and let it fill me. The blood-red shadow of the beast that was my other form filled my mind. Colossal, shaggy, with eyes that glowed pure white.
You wouldn't really hurt a little cat, would you?
I stretched my shoulders.
Watch me!
Have it your way.
I gripped the wheel and strained. In my head, the beast roared. Metal snapped inside the door. The wheel gave. The bars slid back. And I yanked the door open. Sandra Mills stared at me with freaked out eyes. She was white and thin, in her early 30s, with salon-dyed blonde hair and too much foundation that was two shades too yellow for her skin tone. Her sweatpants and an oversized t-shirt hung on her bony shoulders. She clutched a white cat to her. She opened her mouth. Nothing came out. I reached over, grabbed the wheel, and snapped it off the door. Sandra jerked back.
I talked to you, and you came out on your own. If you say anything different...
I bent the wheel's spokes with my hands. She nodded frantically. In the distance, police siren wailed, getting closer. The beast evaporated from my mind, as if swept by a wind. Fatigue took over. I winked at Sandra, took the cat from her arms, and headed outside. I would have to spin a cute story for the cops, convince Leon and Grandma that the door must have been damaged by the brick, and then I would have to call the insurance company. Catalina didn't need one more headache. I was the youngest kid in my family, but I was a bailer. We always pulled our weight.
We hope you have enjoyed this production of Hidden Legacy 4, Sapphire Flames, by Alona Andrews. Narrated by Alicia Beltran as Catalina. With Anthony Palmini as Alessandro. Amanda Forstrom as Runa. Richard Rowan as Linus Duncan. Sara Sue as Arabella. Ryan Haugen as Bug. Julian Delaney as Burn. Zura Johnson as Mom. Rob Moreira as Leon. Gregory Linnington as Benedict. Ian DePriest as Ragnar. John Vertulo as Augustine. Nanette Savard as Grandma. Tia Shearer as Celia. Drew Copus as Louie. Ozzie Jacobs as Jocelyn. Marlon Dancehui as Sergeant Hart. And Helen Day as Victoria Tremaine. With additional performances by Donald Guzzi, Laura C. Harris, Chingwe Padraig Sullivan, Michael Glenn, Su Ling Chan, Delton Engel Sorrell, J.W. Roan, Marissa Clay, Ruthie Bowles, Yasmin Toison, Christopher Walker, Megan Poppy, Stefan Walker, Jerry J. Marshall, Ken Jackson, Samantha Cooper, Nora Ashradi, and Wynn Delano. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Megan Hasty. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Megan Hasty. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Copyright 2019 by Alona Andrews Incorporated. Published by arrangement with the author. All rights reserved. Sound recording copyright 2026 by Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Graphic Audio is an RB Media audio brand. This recording is protected by copyright. Unauthorized copying, sharing, or distribution is prohibited. Thank you. Catalina will return in Hidden Legacy 5, Emerald Blaze. Keep listening to hear a sample from The Legends of Thesmar by Helen Scheura, now available in graphic audio. Find this title, along with audiobook giveaways, discounts, new releases, recommendations, and more at graphicaudio.net.
Thea narrowly avoided a severed toe.
You trying to prove something, Sam?
Samra shrugged and threw another pointed tool.
You're chomping at the bit for some action, Althea Nine Lives. Thought I'd oblige you.
Don't test me. You know what will happen. You'll regret it.
Come on. I've got three left.
Her friend brandished the remaining knives. Ren tried to snatch the remaining projectiles from Sam.
Farissa was looking for those.
But Samra paid her no heed. Instead, she flung the blades at Thea. A thrill racing through her body, Thea danced. It was the most natural feeling in the world. She spun gracefully, ducking and weaving, moving like water. It was a skill she had honed deliberately, knowing that against bigger opponents, she'd need to leverage her speed and agility against their strength. All the while, she swiftly collected the weapons. When the last of them landed in her hand, Thea gave Sam a wolfish grin.
My turn.
She flicked her wrist with masterful precision, and the small blade was a blur through the air.
Thea!
The knife had sliced through the lower half of Sam's cherry red ponytail, embedding the chunk of hair in the wall behind her.
Fury, save us.
Ida hung her head in hands.
What? You've been harping on about how you needed a haircut.
I'm gonna kill you.
Sam yanked the blade and her hunk of hair from the stone.
I'd like to see you try.
Sam stared at the severed tresses and then fingered the end of her now cropped ponytail, shaking her head.
You're insane.
Or incredibly skilled.
Or both.
Definitely both.
Ren confiscated Farissa's tools from Thea.
You should have known better than to challenge me at dancing alchemists.
Classic Thea. Doesn't want to be a woman, but she dances better than all of us.
With the excitement dying down, Thea's hand went to the thin, scabbed-over cut on her cheek, the sound of the arrow whistling through the air echoing in her mind. She had the feeling that dancing alchemists had saved her life earlier. Ren caught her gaze, and Thea shrugged. What Ren didn't know wouldn't hurt her, and all in all, it hadn't been a terrible day. It wasn't until Thea kicked off her boots that the realization hit her. Thea's hands froze at the buttons of her tunic, cold suddenly washing over her despite the glow of the fire. Her dagger was missing, and she knew exactly where she had left it.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles and genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.